Welcome to the Men of Eight Gang podcast for Saturday, May 15th, 2010. I'm Steve Borsch. I'm on with Tim Elliott.
Hey, good morning.
And Graham Thickens.
Hello there.
And Mr. Phil Wilson.
Good morning. I love the tribute to the 60s groovy movie.
Yeah, absolutely. It put me in that Brady Bunch mood this morning.
Brady Bunch?
I'm waiting for Herman's Hermits to pop out.
Yeah, there we go. There we go.
You know, no, it's like one of those James Bond knockoff movies from the 60s. They had music like this.
Is. They did.
So like the Matt Helm movies.
Yeah, Matt Helm. There was a James Bond movie that was made that was a parody. It was actually Casino Royale, the first one, the first time it was made.
Was that the one with Dean Martin?
Peter Sellers.
Peter Sellers was in it. Oh, okay. Woody Allen was in it, who played Jimmy Bond. And David Niven actually played James Bond.
Yep. I remember it well.
That was in the late 60s, so Mr. Niven was quite old.
And then Niven went on to do the Pink Panther series, too. So,
he did that years before.
Yes. But so, was that before?
That was way before. Yeah, it was like a decade before. But anyway.
Wow. Hey, we're dating ourselves.
But worth going back and watching.
Yeah, probably not. I could watch Matt Helm movies all day. So.
Yeah. Oh, man.
How about Austin Powers?
I could do that, too.
Yeah.
Yeah, baby.
Yeah, he was great. And we're going to talk about Mojo Minnesota a little bit later. So that's
speaking of Mojo.
Yeah, exactly.
Mojo, baby.
Throw me a bone.
Well, I had somebody ask me
one day. We're going to talk about guns coming from the jumblies.
There we go. I had somebody ask me one day about my, do I ever use Second Life? And I said, well, not really, but I've tried it a few times now since they came out with some new software. And I go in there once in a while. What's your username? And I said, Mojo Fisher. And then, what? I said, yeah. I mean, Fisher was a name, and so I chose Mojo because I'm fishing for my mojo.
There you go.
That seemed really appropriate.
What kind of bait do you use for that item?
Yeah. No kidding. Anyway. So in the news, I was surprised to see that our pals at Internet Broadcasting, a company that was founded by my two friends, George Johnson and Reed Johnson.
Not related.
The CEO left. What's that all about?
Well, he says it's to pursue other things that he wants to do in his career. But I hark back to our, was it end of December or early January predictions for 2010. Yep. And one of my out on a limb predictions was that Internet Broadcasting would get acquired this year. And I keep waiting for that shoe to drop because I just don't see them going forward as an independent company. And I keep waiting for what's the end game here, And I take, and this is just my personal opinion. I have no inside information whatsoever. I think David and that board has got to have been trying to sell that company. That's my opinion. And they haven't succeeded, and he's moving on. And now the word I got yesterday was at the employee meeting. The only thing that was announced was that they're going to hire a new CEO. So I kind of thought his leaving might have been a prelude to them getting acquired, like a condition of them being acquired. But apparently that's not the case. And now another CEO is going to come in and try to dress it up or get a, either go forward with an independent strategy or get acquired. I mean, it's anybody's bet which it is. But anyway, that's my piece on the thing. But I was thinking some bigger news might have come out yesterday when they were holding that employee meeting, and it didn't.
Well, that's what I was thinking, too, is that there'd be something released, but there wasn't. Here's what I've wondered about for a long time. Why haven't they turned into more of a platform?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, clearly that's what they're trying to do with advertising, but they're doing partnerships. Yeah. Rather than alliances, rather than building
brand,
their own stuff.
Branding it themselves.
Yeah.
I mean, branding their own platform. Yeah, their biggest asset has to be the whatever it is monthly uniques now, 15 million, 17 million monthly uniques, unique visitors to their network of sites. But it's a scattered network. I mean, and the individual stations are the brands.
Right.
Internet broadcasting has never really been its own brand. And I don't know if it is possible to turn it into one, but I guess I kind of expected, and I had heard, you know, rumblings that that's kind of where they were going, to try to turn it into, you know, a more out in front kind of a brand, that it could become a consumer brand of its own somehow. But it ain't happened.
Well, they did a deal with Mashree.com, the company that, you know, helps organizations build APIs.
Yep.
For their platform. And, you know, so I mean, obviously they probably have that in their strategic future. We should poke around some more and find out. But
when did they announce that Mashree deal? How long has that been?
You know, that's maybe been a month and a half, 2 months, oh, okay. Something like that. They, yeah. Okay. Yeah, they released.
Well, that's interesting, and I know the guy who would be in the center of that then, and I haven't discussed it with him. Well, but I'll be seeing him in a couple of weeks.
Well, I love the, and this may be germane to this discussion, but there was an article by an interview with Warren Buffett, and he talked about the reasons why you don't want to have a business strategy that makes you a middleman.
Hmm.
And basically his whole premise in this interview, and I'll see if I can find it and put it in the show notes, but his entire premise was that, once your customers learn about what you do and how you do it, they can find other ways to replace your value chain and keep the margin for themselves.
Yep.
And I thought that was an interesting take on the whole matter.
It is very interesting.
Yeah. Huh.
Yeah. Well, you know, I mean, internet broadcasting is one of our largest employers in this town that's in the internet space.
Exactly.
They peaked at something like 400 employees. I don't know what they're at now, at 300 anyway. They've had their, you know, cutbacks like everybody else. Now, not all those employees are officed in St. Paul, but I think about at least three quarters of them are. So, but they're strangely quiet, you know, below the radar kind of a company, even locally here. And I've attempted to learn more about them going back to when LeBeau joined the company in mid 07, I think it was. But to this day, I probably know less about or know more about them now than I did in 07, you know.
Right, right.
Even though I do know people over there, but they're very private and, you know, they don't let much out. And so his announcing suddenly his departure is, you know, the biggest news that's happened with them lately. And we don't know where it's going yet, but I guess we'll find out.
Well, one of the things I was wondering about, and I haven't been able to find out, is what they offer, for H.264 video. You know,
I wonder where they're going with that. Well,
they don't talk about it at all on their website anywhere. They don't talk in their technology solutions and so forth.
Well, they just aren't very forthcoming on their website or anywhere, you know.
Do you guys, when you guys, I think about all three of you guys with respect to your clients, And right now, how are you advising them to deliver video?
Through either YouTube or Vimeo.
Yeah, same.
Because of the...
Or both. Many times we do both.
Okay.
Well, yeah, simply because YouTube has a time limit. I usually have to use Vimeo for some of the longer form stuff.
Yep. You know, I like Vimeo because you can do private video. The quality is better. You can unbrand it completely if you want, if you pay for the pro. So there's legitimate reasons, and they are moving. They have actually a test HTML5 for Vimeo. Yep. So
right.
they'll be iPad friendly fairly shortly.
Right.
But YouTube has always been iPhone and iPad friendly.
Yep.
So with their on the fly transcoding. So that's another reason that I advise clients to move into YouTube.
Okay. Yeah, because I do exactly the same thing. And the other thing I like about Vimeo, even though they've got restrictions on using it for commercial applications, they you know, if you're not really obnoxious with it, I don't think they really care. But what I love is, A, you can make it domain specific, so the video will only play on that domain. And the second thing is that you can insert some text with a URL. So when the video is over, up comes the text and you can have a call to action. You'll click here to order. And
cool.
You click and it takes you to whatever web page. And so, you know, it's solutions like that that can kind of cover all the bases. And I'm doing exactly the same thing. Those two are the delivery models of choice right now. Okay. And I just wondered, you know, because you saw Bright Cove talk about H.264 and HTML5 and stepping up right away saying, you know, essentially, we're going to future-proof you, client. So choose us as your platform. And so it's just interesting to me, not that they don't disclose everything about their technology and what they do, but they don't say anything at all about it.
What do you mean?
There's nothing. I mean, if I was a TV station and I was entertaining the idea of going with internet broadcasting, I'd want to have them be screaming at me on their homepage, "We are your strategic choice. You want to go with us because the networks are doing an end run around your business and you want to choose us to be your platform. And here's why." And I don't really see that on their site. I mean, they're not really, you know, yeah, they got advanced ad targeting and full service ad operations and so on. But it's not really pushing hard on those
points. It's not a platform.
It's
a glorified ad network.
Yeah.
But somebody, if they're really looking to do something with that company, they're going to have to bring in somebody that has the knowledge like you do, Steve, that could go in there and say, hey, you know, or here's what we need to be doing and have a vision and go forth with it, you know.
Yeah, yeah.
I don't know what the board's got in mind over there, but like I say, I think selling is probably more what I'm tilting towards than trying to fix it or change it or evolve it, you know?
Yep. Yep.
But,
well, I really want to see these guys be successful because you're right. Yeah. I mean, they're a big employer and interactive and they do a great job. The sites they deliver are world-class. You know, they did the content feed for NBC for the Olympics.
Yeah. A couple of Olympics.
Yeah.
I think.
Yeah. So, I mean, their platform is highly scalable and they have the ability to turn content around pretty quickly and so forth.
Yep, so, and they've got a lot of good media people that work over there too. I mean, a lot of, you know, good talent. So, they're kind of our local TV play. And then when you mention Bright Cove, of course, that has Minnesota tie-in as well with Jeremy Allaire being the fearless leader of that company,
right?
And having come out of Winona, Minnesota, of all places, and of course based in the Twin Cities in the early days of Allaire Corp,
yep,
acquired by Macromedia for tons of money, and they had of course moved to Cambridge, Massachusetts by that time. But anyway, there's another little Minnesota trivia piece there.
Say, out of the blue, yesterday, I got a Twitter follow from a guy named Troy Peterson, and I saw that he had, you know, 5,600 or 5,800 and some followers and 5,600 people he was following, and I thought, who is this guy? And I click on his link, and it comes to his location is Stillwater, Minnesota. He's the CEO of Nibby Software.
Yeah, I mentioned them in my piece about the iPhone apps.
I've never heard of these guys.
I hadn't either. He came out of nowhere on me, and he sounds like a really wild guy. I mean, he's a fascinating entrepreneur who apparently was cited by, was it Finance and Commerce or Business Journal? Cited, you know, like up-and-coming entrepreneurs, and that's where I first saw his name and I thought, well, what the heck is this all about? And it's about online learning and education. I mean, he's in the education space. So, yeah.
Well, he's really, according to their About Us, it's for platforms that create platforms for corporations and educational communities. Mm-hmm. That they're online educational
corporate training would be
database. Well, and what's interesting about it is, I know Tim and Phil, you guys have been involved with Joseph Reuter on his curation station, and it's right on the front page here. Join our curator group, and you know, I'm assuming I don't know enough about it. I've got to poke around a little bit, but you know, apparently it's they're you know they've got a crowdsourcing aspect here to pump videos into the system. Mm-hmm. But I hadn't heard of these guys before. You know, like we've talked about before, this happens over and over and over again, where all of a sudden, totally out of the blue, you hear about some company and it's been around 3 or 4 years. And
yeah, just well, you amazing. Know, it's unique to Minnesota. I think that there are a lot. Well, maybe not unique to Minnesota, but the Minnesota mentality of keeping things under a you know. Under wraps is, you know, that, you know, there isn't as much interaction between the startup community where everybody knows about everybody as there is in Silicon Valley and right. say Seattle, you know, right. A lot of these people are just quietly toiling away in their little corner of the world. And, but I'll tell you something, this Troy Peterson doesn't sound like he's a shy dude at all. He's not out there. And so I got a feeling we're going to be hearing a lot more about what he's doing.
Well, if you go to their site, and I'll put it in the show notes, they have join us on Facebook, and they have Facebook colors. You can log in with Facebook Connect or your LinkedIn credentials. And that could be a good segue into our main crux of our discussion today, which is around Facebook and their new privacy policies. And we're going to have a special guest on in a few minutes, but I thought I'd just start off the conversation just to level set for our listeners. I'm sure everyone that's listening to this knows the controversy, but if you don't, Facebook's F8 announcement, where they talked about all of the new good for consumer things that they were doing, they were in essence enabling your social graph, if you're part of Facebook, to be substantially more public, unless you specifically went in to the 50 different options with 170 variations and turned things off so that only your friends could see things. And that the explosion of brouhaha around this, people defending Mark Zuckerberg and Facebook, and people like me or kind of following some leaders who have deleted their Facebook account, which I did a couple nights ago. Great concern about what Facebook is doing.
Yeah. The problem is they keep changing the privacy regulation or the privacy policy, and and one take on this is that it isn't what people signed up for initially. In other words, the privacy policy when we signed up is what we agreed to do. You know what I mean? And then along comes Facebook and keeps changing things, and you know, your average consumer just can't keep up. I mean, it becomes more and more complex to sort of monitor your, you know, where your settings in Facebook, and as I know you've mentioned, Steve, many people just your average consumer just can't keep up on it or doesn't bother.
Right.
Well, I think it depends on how you use Facebook. I mean, I use Facebook in a professional way, and I have to be on Facebook to serve the clients. I have like 30 Facebook pages that I administer, So if I deactivate my account, you know, those pages don't go away, but, you know, I can't do my job. So for those of us that have to use the platform, there are ways that you can lock down your privacy. And I spent a little bit of time yesterday reviewing the privacy settings, which were pretty strong to start with, but I was able to make it a little bit stronger. I did post on my profile a video that went around the internet the last couple of days on how to actually go in and where to look to make those changes. So I think that that's what needs to be done, is this more education, because you can lock your profile down if you want.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yep. Which is what I ended up doing.
You didn't delete. And I thought you deleted your account.
Well, I went in and I followed a set of instructions that I found on the net, and went in and did the same thing that you did, Tim, which is set every single one of those privacy settings the way that I wanted to. So it was just friends, not friends of friends, because that's where you get into trouble. Then I started to look at it, and I started to say, how much time, because I don't do what you do, Tim. I'm not in setting up Facebook pages for clients, even though I've done some integrations for three clients. And I looked at it and I said, how much time do I spend in it? And it's maybe an hour a week. And how much stuff do I have in there? A fair amount, but I'm not really revealing a lot. But here's the biggest reason for me. I have railed against Facebook's walled garden from day one. That's mm-hmm. that's my number one issue, is the walled garden. And, yeah. And the fact that, you know, if you want to connect with people, you got to connect in Facebook. And I have people sending me messages inside Facebook. Sometimes I see them, sometimes I don't. Then I set myself up for email so I could get email notifications, so I didn't have to log in. And I started to look at all of it, and I said, that's not where I want to go. If I'm going to be open and transparent, I'm going to be open and transparent. I'm going to have this stuff. You know, if you Google me, you can find everything. You know, the good, the bad, the conservative political ramblings of from 2000, and the more liberal ones from recently, and all over the place. But I think more about my sisters, for instance, who are on and are doing a lot of really fun stuff and playing games and involved in a lot of different things. And we have conversations about this sort of thing, and I try to tell them, don't do that, or don't do that, or don't do that, because it's exposing stuff that shouldn't be there. And I sent you guys a link this morning to a site that some guys put together called Open Book, mm-hmm. which is a front end for the public search API that Facebook released April 21st, 2010. And when you click on the link, they've already got some examples of searching Facebook updates. One is cheated test. Another one is don't tell anyone. Another one is rectal exam. Another one is HIV test. And when you search on those, it pulls up people who have, a lot of them are just, they've mentioned it, but a lot of them have talked about their results. Like HIV, I'm looking at the HIV test one. And I think, oh my God, talk about exposing personal information. I would bet 100% of these people are totally clueless on the fact that this stuff is exposed to the world, to anyone.
Yep. Yeah, and you don't even have to be logged into Facebook.
Right.
To see these results. Right. Anybody can look at them.
Anybody can look at
them. Whether they've registered with Facebook or not.
Right.
Yep. It's crazy. It's scary for those people.
And I've had some people argue with me about this and saying, it's that's your problem. You know, they're the ones that put this stuff up and put it online. But there's an inherent and implicit pact that you make with Facebook that you're friending people and your stuff is going to be just available to your friends. And that's the number one danger, because they should have one selection that toggles all this stuff for everything, to say, I only want my friends to see this, and push the button and it sets all the settings, or, have a small, medium, and large button or something, so that you can expose things that you want to, but only to friends.
Yeah.
What do you think, Tim? Phil?
Oh, absolutely. I believe they should do that. But at the same time, if you're on Facebook, you should understand how to take control over the privacy settings. They are way too complicated. I agree with you there. But if you're going to be out there and you're going to put personal information out there for your friends and family, you think you should go the extra mile to figure out if you're actually open to friends of friends or to everybody, which I guess some people might be. So I think it's incumbent on the user to go in and make sure that they, that they look at their privacy settings and they try to figure it out. And there are some, there's some good tutorials out there, but I think only the people that are at the very top of this thing, ironically, the kind of people that are quitting Facebook are the ones that are really concerned about this, and that the average person probably isn't.
Oh, I would say this isn't. No, I would agree with you. I don't think the average person cares, but and I also think that based on all the people that I know that are on Facebook, I will tell you that it's like going in and reading Facebook's privacy policy and their terms of service. I ask anyone that's listening to this to go in and do that. Go in and read the privacy, go in and read the terms of service. And if you are not asleep in about 5 minutes, I will be, give me a call and let me know, because it's unbelievable how long it is. And 99% of the people that are on Facebook out of that 400 million that are on, none of them are going to read that. But, we should bring on a guy who's our guest today, Tom Borgerding, who's the CEO of Campus.
Borgerding is Borgerding. The way it's pronounced.
Thank you.
Yeah. Borgerding.
And he's the CEO of Campus Media Group here in Bloomington, and they do a lot of Facebook campaigns, right, for clients, Graham?
Yes, they are specialists in the youth market, particularly the college marketing space, and have been around for several years. And they work with many, many brands, mostly B2C kinds of brands. And I thought he'd be a logical one to talk about the privacy issues with, to see if he's hearing about it.
Well, let's add him to the conference. I'm calling him now. And we'll get his take on it in terms of how it impacts their business and so forth.
Good morning, this is Tom.
Good morning, Tom. Steve Borsch, Phil Wilson, Graham Thickens, Tim Elliott.
Hey, Tom.
Good morning, gentlemen.
How are you?
Morning. Thanks for having me on.
Are you on mobile phone or...
I am.
Yeah. Well, you sound pretty good from where I am.
Yeah. Yeah, good. Absolutely. Hey, we just started chatting about Facebook and about what they've been doing with their privacy settings and, people deleting their accounts like I just did 2 days ago, things of that nature. And, Tim, you had said that you thought that there was some issues with that people should take responsibility for it. But, and mine was that most people are fairly clueless, but Tom, you're the CEO of Campus Media Group and obviously you guys are doing a lot in Facebook. Can you just describe Campus Media and what you guys do and what you do with Facebook? And then we'll kind of get into some of the privacy stuff that's going on.
Sure. We are a youth marketing firm, so we're helping clients primarily who want to reach college students develop marketing plans and executing on those. And that includes developing a presence on Facebook in some cases, or managing programs and helping them develop strategies for how to connect and communicate with students.
Yep.
Through many means. And Facebook is one of those that we've been more active with recently over the last couple of years.
So you're, Tom, you're running Facebook ad programs, I'm sure, ads on Facebook for clients?
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yep. Yeah, absolutely.
And you also, go ahead.
We also do are helping clients develop strategies for what to do in having a presence on Facebook. So what kind of content would you actually put up there? What would it, how do you engage students? How do you engage people with their use of, with your presence on Facebook?
Sure. And you do a lot of event work too, or some of your campaigns involve sort of event kinds of things on campuses, that sort of thing. Is that still true or?
Absolutely. Yeah. So we work with, we do events, so we'll put street teams or hire students to do work for us around college campuses. We'll also do run ads in college newspapers, out-of-home advertising on campuses, location-based media, email advertising, transit advertising, and a variety of other things.
Yeah, so you're kind of a unique mix of online and offline, but focused on that college market in particular.
Absolutely. Yep, it's what we've been doing for about 14 years.
Yeah. Rattle off a few of your clients, so the ones you can identify, some bigger brands, maybe.
For the larger clients for us as Campus Media Group as a whole, PricewaterhouseCoopers, McDonald's, Hardee's, Pizza Hut, 3M.
Wow.
To name a few.
Yeah.
I could go on at Deloitte and Touche.
Wow.
So we're doing a lot of work. We use Facebook a lot for recruitment campaigns, a lot of recruitment programs, a lot of driving traffic into physical locations, stores, and then to online properties as well.
Cool. Well, what are you hearing? I guess from our chat yesterday, it doesn't sound like you're getting a lot of reaction right now from your clients about the privacy issue.
I haven't heard anybody ask any questions in regards to it at this point. I do feel that the clients themselves that are having a presence on Facebook are conservative enough not to be putting out poorly worded propaganda about their business or opinions about other people that would be taken negatively like that. So at least in that side, if I was helping on the B2C side, I don't see them putting themselves in a position like that, or I haven't heard of any of our clients doing that.
Well, and a lot of these big brands, I mean, have policies over their employees' use of things like Facebook, right?
Absolutely. Yeah, so, absolutely. We even have one internally for us.
There's
usually what's happening is that the people that are managing that Facebook presence, there's only anywhere from one to three that are doing that, and they're pretty well controlled on the types of messages. They're PR people. They're people that understand what to say and how to say it. They're not reactionary types.
You're saying at some of these big brands, that even large companies, there may only be one to three people in the company that are even dealing with the Facebook presence?
Right.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah. So, for instance, PwC itself has one primary person handling their PwC careers site on Facebook. And he's the one primarily doing the posting and commenting and answering questions and really being the face of PricewaterhouseCoopers.
Well, Tom, I had a client that who was reading the New York Times, and he read this article about Facebook's new privacy policy and the number of options and what it takes to opt out of things that would potentially be exposed to the public. And then he started poking around, and he was just fine. He was on Google News, he said, and he found a bunch of articles. And here's the question he asked me: what's the possibility that Facebook will rapidly downtrend like MySpace did? And he asked me that because he had built a presence in MySpace, and he said nobody ever goes there, nobody ever looks at it, and
right.
It's like everybody abandoned right. MySpace. He said, "What's the chance that Facebook?" And I said, "Well, you know, it's like people talking about the death of Microsoft. You know, I mean, yeah, their stock's flat, but Microsoft's not going anywhere. I mean, they're going to be around a long, I mean, even if they did nothing else, they'd be around for decades, you know, just milking what they've got. So with a 400 million person user base, it's unlikely that Facebook is going to go away quickly. But, you know, if it does get tainted pretty dramatically, would that impact you negatively?
I think not immediately. And it's, you know, I think clients are still going to, there's 400 million people there, and the percentage, at least on the college side of things, at least the penetration of college students that are using it is still in the, you know, the high 90s, so 90 percentage points. So it's, I don't see our clients going away from it anytime soon. I'm also not hearing of a really strong alternative at this point.
Yeah.
So I don't see the downfall of it happening like MySpace was getting the pressure from Facebook, and when that started occurring, somebody was going to somebody needed to lose. So in MySpace, obviously, is a clear loser in that case. And
right, right.
I just don't see anybody else coming up as a close second or to what Facebook has going on.
Do you see that?
A few people.
Do you see that with your target customer being college students that they're that concerned over these privacy issues?
I haven't heard of college students being overly concerned with the marketplace or with the privacy issues. They've got a pretty good handle on controlling their profile and what they allow. But there is a lot of chatter among college students to be more careful, to treat it more like a LinkedIn account, mm-hmm. Where they only put information up there that they are okay with many people seeing.
Yep.
I know a lot of recruiters that are using Facebook to get more information about a student before they hire them. But I think students are becoming more and more conscious of that issue.
I think that you've got to look at this whole Facebook thing from a different set of eyes, guys. I think that you know we as experienced media folks have a clear understanding of what should be private and what should not be private. But that is our definition just based on our age. Now, you know, I don't know the age of everybody on our group, but I have a good idea. The fact
39.
Is
39.
Yeah, exactly. The fact is that privacy to you and I is a completely different thing to privacy of the new generations that have followed before or have come after us. The fact is that a 15, 16, 17 year old does not consider what we consider private that private. I mean, they've grown up in a generation of always connected, always on, and always sharing. So I think that there's a real difference of opinion. And that's why you're not hearing a big outcry from, you know, those younger users, I would guess. But those younger users are also more savvy. I think that they're spending more time on Facebook. So they're seeing more change in Facebook and they're reacting to that change in Facebook. Is it going to always be in a positive way? No, probably not. Is it always going to be in a checking their privacy settings as we would wish they would check their privacy settings? No, not going to be that way. But they are more savvy. It's their telephone. They know how to use it and they know how to use it well.
Well, I'll tell you though, my daughter, Biz, Elizabeth, is 21, student at the U of M, and she's over the other night and sitting with her laptop and she's going, oh, geez, oh, you got to be kidding me. Well, it turns out that her entire circle of friends, and yeah, she works at the Apple store at Mall of America. Oh, she's going to go to the new Uptown store, by the way.
Hey, great for her. Right down the street from her, where she lives. Yeah, that's not a bad deal. Yeah.
Of course, now I should probably cut that out because maybe I shouldn't have said that. But anyway.
Yeah, you probably ought to.
Yeah. So she and I asked her specifically, is this all your technology friends? And she goes, oh, no. She goes, everybody's talking about it. And I thought that was really interesting because she was looking at how do I delete my Facebook account? And she's really on the fence. She has this huge push pull because she's got, you know, hundreds of photos in there and she's connected to hundreds of people and connected to people that she's known for, you know, 5-6 years. And she's really undergoing a lot of angst because on the one hand, she's really mad that Facebook opened up stuff that she's posted, you know, even a couple of years ago when she was going through some issues. She's like, you know, I don't want that shit out there, she says. It's like, okay, well, don't use that word, honey. But anyway. Yes.
Yeah. Good luck on that. 21. Yeah. Remember, yeah, dad. Exactly.
Yeah. But to hear it coming from her really surprised me. I thought I would be the one to sort of give her a heads up on what was going on, and was the other way around. So I guess I agree with you, Phil, but at the same time, anyone who is connected, anyone who's paying attention on Twitter and you know, are in Facebook, and they are having people raise this issue, the awareness is growing, even amongst people that are substantially younger than us.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. And the other thing that I think is really interesting about Facebook is this is getting to be big for business. I mean, the number of companies that have, you know, Facebook pages, fan pages, whatever you want to call them, company pages, is only increasing. And I think the business world, the brands are obviously monitoring the situation very closely. And one firm that I know of that's sort of riding this whole crest is Involver. Tom, do you use that platform for any of your clients?
Well, we have not, no.
Okay. It's kind of about, but you know what it is.
Absolutely.
Yeah, it's kind of the notion of Facebook fan pages on steroids. You can do so many more things with Facebook company pages using their platform. And I know there's a local connection with that company. It's a Bay Area-based company that's well-backed and doing very, very well. But Kim Gerritsen is a consultant to the company and has helped bring many brands to their platform, like General Mills brands, for example. And I just wanted to do that shout-out. They recently made an announcement where they're doing something with Facebook Sports. Did you see that, Steve?
No, I didn't.
Where they're going to be writing a new leaderboard app for Facebook Sports, starting with the FIFA, the World Cup soccer.
Yes, thing. I did see that. Yeah.
Yeah. And the point I wanted to make is that Facebook isn't just about consumers and college kids. I mean, it's getting to be a lot about big business running their social media engagement on this platform and on add-on platforms like Involver, which, enable them to communicate with their marketplaces and conduct commerce and everything else, even within Facebook. And another little shout out for our local Alvenda, which was really the breakout company that started enabling commerce right within Facebook.
Well, Tom, I would say that, can I just ask you about something that I've kind of wondered about? And from your perspective, talking to my old boss, who was a chief marketing officer at a company I was at, and he and a couple of other people started a famous PR firm here in town. And we were talking about what was happening in the advertising and marketing world. And he was really lamenting the fact that, boy, it used to be really easy to go after a target market, the physician's market or, diesel mechanics or whatever you were going after. There were just a handful of trade publications or specific places where these people were paying attention, and that's all gone. And in my view, I look at Facebook as being that opportunity, like you said, Graham. But Tom, from your perspective, are you seeing that Facebook is a place that could potentially be that attention hub where it makes it easier to do ad buys or promotions versus there's sort of this groundswell now of open source. Diaspora is an open source Facebook alternative that these college students are going to build, and they got about 50,000 in donations in like 3 days to start the project this summer. And people are talking about Google has an opportunity now but if that happens, won't that just disperse it even more and make it even harder? Do you see Facebook as an easy place for your clients to be able to participate and for you guys to be able to run promotions and things?
Right now, for the most part, it is becoming easier and easier for us. Their ad model and being able to purchase advertising is pretty granular, so that's nice. I do think that's a lot easier now. If alternatives come along, we'll buy into those things and look at that stuff for a presence for our clients. Like we just we're building a site for a client of ours right now, and a retail clothing line, and they are we're developing a site for it's all the main site is built on WordPress, and then we're tying it into Facebook and Polyvore. And I don't know if you've heard of Polyvore before or not.
No,
but
it's an all retail, all clothing social network. So you can actually pick and choose different items of clothing and put it all together. It's primarily targeted at women. I think they have over 3 million users right now, but we're actually tying all those things together in a way that makes sense for our clients. So in that particular case, it makes sense for them to have their brand tied into a new social network and help drive it there and integrate or relate to the brand a lot better. So trying to take advantage of those new ones that come along, like Polyvore, is a huge opportunity for some clients. I think Facebook is almost at this point an assumption that a brand is going to be there. So I don't see it going away anytime soon. The biggest challenges I'm seeing out of clients and what to do with social media are the challenges that a lot of medium or smaller size companies are using it more as the same concept as their website. So it's more of a brochure. Here's some simple things where we might blog or post something about our product on it, but they're not creating a conversation.
Yeah.
And until they create that conversation, they're wasting their time on Facebook. It's okay to have a presence, but they're not doing what the consumer expects them to be able to do, which is have a conversation.
There you go. Yeah. Yeah. Well, Tom, hey, really appreciate you coming on with us. And,
thank you, Tom.
Tom, I also have to say, as a fraternity brother of mine, a FIGAM brother, so I know him well through that connection. And always a pleasure to get your perspective on things, Tom. So enjoy the great weather out there. And are you going fishing today or not?
I am not. Just planning on being outside as much as I can.
There you go.
Thank you guys thanks for having me a part of the show. It's been fantastic. I appreciate it.
Thank you, Tom.
Great stuff.
Thank you, Tom.
Take care.
Talk to you later.
Well, that was great. I'm glad he could join.
Yeah. So yeah, I forgot. Today is the fishing opener, isn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Anybody going Lunkin? Anybody here gonna do a little Lunkin?
Nah. You know what is so funny? My dad's 84.
Yeah.
And he used to take me out when I was, 4 or 5 years old is when I started fishing. And we go out on the lake. And now normally with little kids, you'll take them out for a half hour or 45 minutes and you go back in. He'd get me up at like 5 a.m. and we'd go out. We'd come back in like at 11. Just remember being so bored. So when I got older, it was like the last thing I'm ever going to do is go fishing. My kids both wanted to fish. So I would drag my ass down to the dock down here on Starring Lake and let them throw a line in and go fishing. But anyway, so that's why I'm not running for governor, because I know I'd have to go to the fishing opener every year.
Right. and he's way up in International Falls today, I guess. But the weather's supposed to be gorgeous throughout the whole state. Yeah. So
yeah, absolutely.
Pretty amazing.
Absolutely. Hey, well, what's coming up now this week?
We've got Mojo. Minnesota's having a little invite-only party coming up on the, I believe that's the 20th, isn't it?
It's Thursday, right?
A Thursday.
So is that a breakfast thing?
No, it's an evening thing.
Yeah, it's.
It's
an evening. Okay. Yep.
Okay. Starting, I believe, at 4 o'clock. Am I right on that, gents?
Yes, 4 to 6:30.
Then that's overlapping the Sales and Marketing Executives International social media panel at Fort Snelling Officers Club. Yeah. So I have a conflict.
I hate when that happens, Graham.
Well, and then Mini Bar comes Saturday,
up Saturday
at Best Buy's
Social
headquarters.
Media Breakfast is also on Friday.
That's right.
Out at the State Fairgrounds.
Yep.
We're talking gardening and that sort of thing, and organic gardening.
Organic, yeah, organic food growing and stuff like that. Yeah,
that should be good.
Yeah. Yeah. And then
Steve is going to be showcasing his fine weed collection there. So
yes, I will. In fact, I'll pull them out today when it's so nice out and bring them along.
And I was going to say that afternoon, Vizzy is having their open house at their Eden Prairie Data Center. So that goes on all afternoon, I guess.
We're on Friday.
Stop in. Yeah. People can just stop in between noon and six, I think, anytime. And
also, I don't know if it's still hush hush, but it's not going to be now. But on Wednesday, that's also on Thursday, is Minneapolis St. Paul Business Journal's Women in Business Luncheon. And Minivate friend and Lisa Foote from Mixmobi is being honored there.
What day is that?
I believe it's Thursday.
Oh, and wow. That's a noon thing. Yeah, I should
try. That'd be a luncheon. So that one's got the clue right in it as to when that is. So,
yeah,
it's 11 o'clock, starts about 11 o'clock on Thursday. So be there. So it's a big end of week for the tech social media group here in Minneapolis.
Well, this is a good thing because we got to get done before Memorial Day because it's I've tried to host events in the summer. Yeah. And the attendance is just all over the map. I mean, people they just don't show up because they got other things going on, especially evening events. If you try to do something, it's a gorgeous night. I mean, it's just, you know, people just don't show up. So that's good.
And also Friday afternoon and Saturday events for people that tend to go up to the cabin or whatever is not the best event planning either.
Yeah.
I just saw this tweet from Jeff Jarvis. I don't know if you guys have seen this, that the French foreign minister is calling for the internet to be recognized as an international space.
I don't know
what that means, but I just saw that tweet.
Huh.
Those crazy French people.
I know. They
What do they know?
Yeah. Save our ass. That's all they're saying. Yeah. Somebody save our ass.
Don't get George Reese going. He'll start tweeting in French again. And
yeah.
Oh my God. Have you been following George's ramblings on Twitter? It's crazy. You know, he gets into so many fights with so many people.
Sometimes he gets really cranky and it's fun. It's funny to read his stuff.
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
Well, Phil, you were when you and I talked this week, you were lamenting.
Lamenting
social skills of social media pros,
social media folks. I am constantly amazed about that when we talk about social media and everybody seems to forget about the social part. And I was perplexed. I'm amazed at some people that spend a great deal of time talking about how important it is to, you know, be conversational and observe certain, you know, social skills when communicating via Twitter or Facebook or whatever. But you get to them in person and it's just like, where the hell did you learn that? they don't have that sort of that acumen, which is, which I think is very much a part of internet life.
You mean they're not practicing what they're preaching?
It's just, in person. I don't know how many, and I come back to this all the time. I don't know how many people who I shake hands with that I am just amazed at. You can actually grip things with that hand. What's the problem here, dude? Give me a handshake, will you?
So in meat space, they're not socially adept.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So, and then, I also was, constantly amazed at the people that I will pick up as followers on Twitter. And I know that a lot of people have this crazy conception that if somebody follows you on Twitter, you should follow them back. And I just think that is an incredibly stupid concept. I got a follow by a social media expert. And I tweeted about this earlier in the week, a social media expert who requested to follow me. And I checked the first page of his Twitter profile. 95% of the tweets were check-ins via Foursquare.
Huh.
I don't really care. To me, that's not social media. To me, that's just look at me and waving around. You know, it's like, look at me, look at me, look at me. I have nothing to add, but look at me, look at me, look at me.
Yeah.
Well, that's, that's why I like to follow people like Tim O'Reilly and Doc Searles and David Weinberger and people that are that tweet stuff of value. And I see all three of you guys do that all the time. And I try to do it as well, which is you come across something that you are pretty sure would be germane or interesting to others. And you send it out, even though I forwarded one tweet on the Adobe Flash thing and Doug Olson, you know, the guy, who's the GM of the Microsoft group, does a comment back to me about, well, you really, really are opinionated about that or something to that effect. And it actually wasn't my article or my post. I was tweeting about somebody else's.
People do that to me too. Yeah. Sometimes they're replying to links that I send, you know, as if, you know, and taking me to task for the link. It's like, hey, I'm just sharing a link with you, dude. Don't get on me about it. You know,
well, I also think there also needs to be, it just can't be, you know, tweeting valuable stuff. I mean, or sharing valuable stuff, because social media is inherently supposed to be social, not business all the time. So I think that, and I think everybody that I follow or try to follow, and especially this group here, you know, I think we have a healthy amount of information about, what's available or sharing some great links or sharing some thoughts, but also talking about what's going on in our lives tweeting something that's happening right now, which I think is important. I think there has to be a social aspect to it, because if it just becomes this business professional conduit, it ain't social. It's kind of dull.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think you need to mix personal and business in your Twitter account. And then of course some people will have a business Twitter account for their startup, say, and then they'll have their personal account and they'll try to do it that way. But even then they end up mixing business and personal.
Yeah.
But it does make for a more interesting online life when you are social and talking about things other than work and business all the time.
Right.
I agree.
Well, I think that I guess when I was talking about that, Steve, it was one of those things of thinking, you know, you just got to remember that, you are an extension of yourself wherever you are, whether that's in public and person to person social interaction or online. Now, there are many people that are very concerned about their social brand, or as we used to call it when we were growing up, your reputation. But they're not
personal brand. I was going to say is that
personal,
other term
personal brand, which is just, whatever. I think you got to remember you need to be the same person, whatever conduit you happen to be communicating through.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
That was my thing. So when I was talking to Steve about it earlier this week, I was much more bitchy about it, but that was.
So it's what Mark Zuckerberg calls radical transparency, huh?
Right. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Whatever.
Yeah. There we go.
Mark Zuckerberg, you mean the guy that you saw the IMs that somebody dug up of his from years ago?
Oh yeah.
I mean, he's got a real problem, that guy, with his own reputation. And you know, it's hard to think harking back to our original discussion about privacy, that he's serious about it when he's calling basically everybody dumb fucks, you know.
Yeah. Well, he's not the most ethical guy.
No,
yeah, well, that's how he comes across. Right. But, you know, here's what I'll say, though, too, about that. And I always find it interesting when I go back and try to figure out who somebody is based on things that they've written before or where they are. And that doesn't take into account that all of us grow, or we should be. You know, some of us don't, but that we're growing as people. And positions change and outlook changes and perspective changes based on circumstances and growth. I mean, if you were to talk to me in 1999, you would have said, you know, that I'd be under the wing of, you know, fill in the blank conservative Republican. And if you were to, you know, look at me today, you know, I'm maybe leaning left of center. And so what caused that transformation and what happened and what shifted my perspectives and all of that? And so the things I said in 99 are not germane in 2009. And so I look at that with, you know, I guess I cut Zuckerberg some slack over the stuff that he did before, but, I'm not with some of the stuff that's going on. And you know what? Here's the thing. Here's the frightening thing. My 4 years at Vignette from 2000 to 2004 taught me something amazing. And what it taught me was the level of enterprise class business analytics is frighteningly advanced. We had a partner at Vignette. So again, now, this is 6 years ago. We had a partner, Autonomy, the search engine company.
Oh, yeah.
And they bought one of our other partners by the name of Virage. And Virage, at that point, had a facial or had a recognition engine that you could essentially digitize and, for lack of a better metaphor, pour the video into a big funnel. And the filters in it would do facial recognition, speech to text, index the closed captioning track, and do it all by time code. And every major media organization in the world, BBC, CNN, Telemundo, everybody, bought Virage, because what they did is they essentially indexed everything in there and created this huge metadata layer in their digital asset management systems so that they were able to use this software to, you know, you wanted to call up George H.W. Bush and you'd maybe pull up Malta. Boom, there's all of the video related to that and the exact segments. So imagine the power of that for an editor to be able to go in and, you know, slice and dice different scenes together rather than spend, you know, weeks trying to figure out where that all that footage is. Well, Autonomy sort of got out of the enterprise space, and their number one client is the CIA.
I was going to say, I thought Virage was already working with those spooks way back in the early days, weren't they?
There was a major shift in Virage's business, and you basically don't hear anything about them anymore. And it's because they're doing government-level business now as part of Autonomy. So when you think about that level of stuff, and then when I was at Lawson, the whole business analytics space with respect to being able to just simply what you can discover through clickstream data, I can only imagine where things are today. And a company with a valuation of a Facebook, the sorts of inferences and predictive analytics they could do with all of this quote-unquote publicly available data, which really some of it may not be public. But this is the sort of thing where people are relatively clueless about what it means when they're walking around with GPS-enabled phones in their pocket, and anybody, you know, Apple with the iPhone, you can do it as a consumer. Find my iPhone. Well, you can also find your kid's iPhone so you know where they are, because, you know, every minute the thing's pinging the tower saying, here I am, here I am. So when you think about all this data that's there and the ability to do analytics, that's what freaks me out about the overt nature of what Facebook did. And then I'll stop pontificating.
Yeah.
Well, education, smarts. You've got to be educated in whatever you do. It's just that simple. And, you know, I think that falls to people like you and I and all of us here to make sure people understand. You know, there's some risk involved here. There is privacy issues. You have a right to be concerned about that privacy, but you also have many tools available to you to protect that privacy. The easiest of which is don't be involved if you don't want to share.
That's right. And if you want to look in the show notes, because I have a link. I did a quick search on Tim Elliott and the type of underwear you wear, jockey or boxers.
Are you a boxer or a brief kind of guy?
Well, I'm not going to tell you. You're going to have to click on the link and find out, because I did discover it online. No, I'm teasing.
I was going to say, what application did you use for that?
Hey, I just did a Facebook search for Steve Borsch and you're gone.
Yeah.
Wow. I have one less Facebook friend.
Oh, bummer.
You know, why mine went down by a couple notches, I'll bet, because people quit Facebook. Yeah.
Yeah.
So
yeah,
like Paul Kudrowski quit. You're no longer available to me on Facebook?
No. Sorry, buddy. But guess what? There's about 17 other places you can find me. So
yeah. I feel so alone now.
I know. Well, guys, let's wrap it up because it is just, I'm looking out the window and it's way too nice to be sitting inside.
Well, you're the one that was talking. We were ready to go an hour ago.
All right, gentlemen. Have a great Saturday.
Yeah.
You too.
All righty.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.